Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast with your host, Evan McElwain.
Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Evan McElwain, Bowery Capital's Director of Growth. And this week, we are joined by Chris Toy, co-founder and CEO of Marketer Hire, to talk about marketing operations. Chris, great to have you on the show.
Hey, Evan. Good to be here.
So tell us about your background and the current company that you're building, Marketer Hire.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2003 and knew I wanted to go into advertising and marketing and moved to New York, sort of the Mecca. And I went straight into the big global agency world. I started out deliberately in direct response marketing. In 03, digital was still very nascent, and direct response was sort of the data-driven precursor to what is now the digital marketing world. And that was really interesting to me, as much as brand marketing and coming up with interesting campaigns was certainly going to be really fun in a very different way. I was just really taken, having done my internships in college, really taken by direct response marketing and the data-backed nature of it. So I went into that world early on, worked and sort of knocked around a few different agencies, and then sort of jumped into a little bit of entrepreneurship in the mid-2000s, where I had started a soccer blog. Blogs were a new thing in the mid-2000s, and that became really big, got acquired from me by a venture-backed startup in London, moved there for a couple of years, so essentially run that. So there for a couple of years, came back to the States, and at that point, can't really work for anyone else, right? Because the band-aid is off. And so started my first agency in the late 2000s, doing early digital marketing and social media strategies for sports brands. Around 2010, 2011, was at South by Southwest and I've been following tech this whole time, right? I'm talking to a lot of founders and seeing what founders were doing under the guise of sort of marketing at South by Southwest, which was really, I was like, this doesn't seem great. Here's a sticker, download the app. And it's like, I don't know like how many that's going to get you really, right? And getting in TechCrunch was still like, that's the whole strategy. If we can just get in TechCrunch, we might do it. And then if we don't, like, we'll just keep building and maybe we'll go viral, right? And so I pivoted my agency to focus on startups. And that's actually when I met one of my now co-founders, Roger Damani, who was running his company at the time, Bucket Feet. And he was an early client of mine. So there for a few years. And then around 2012, 2013, was working on what is now Marketer Hire, and was working on a few ideas of how to sort of turn my agency and marketing experience into a tech product. And one of the final ideas was what is now Marketer Hire, but I actually ended up getting distracted by the fact that in this R&D, I realized that there was how come there's no good like group chat apps? Like this was like 2012, right? I mean, that seems really weird. And there's definitely a room for this. So I moved to San Francisco and raised a few million in venture to build a group chat app, like an IRC chat inspired group chat app. I was like, this is gonna be great. That ended up being the year, unbeknownst to me, Slack launches, Discord launches, Instagram ads, DMs. 2013, 2015 was like the chatbot chat wars era. So good timing, we did pretty well, didn't end up winning. So came back to, you know, wind that company down, came back to the well with Marketer Hire, what is now Marketer Hire, continuing to be obsessed with this idea. And just so much of the world had shifted, trends and tailwinds had shifted, that this was like perfect timing, right? So much was in our favor to launch a company like this. So did that in sort of late 2018, early 2019, and then here we are.
Wow, love it. I mean, I think it's interesting just to see, you know, taking the bits of marketing that you liked, then stumble into entrepreneurship through this blog that became a much bigger thing, and then combining them both with, okay, how can I start my own agency? Then how can we get more tech forward with what is now Marketer Hire? That's a really cool journey. So obviously I know what you guys do. I think it's amazing. But for those that haven't heard of Marketer Hire or who aren't as familiar, can you just talk a little bit about what it is and sort of why now is a good time, as you were alluding to?
It's what's called a managed marketplace or managed platforms. And it's a talent marketplace and a talent platform. What's different about a managed marketplace or managed platform is there's a curation element to the supply side, as opposed to whether it's like an Upwork or whether it's maybe like an Airbnb, where it's entirely self-serve and then entirely self-search on the demand side, where, hey, you're on your own and we're just building these tools in between. There's a curation element really to both sides, but the product pitches the curation element on the supply side. So we'll take hundreds and thousands of applications from marketers, run our very carefully designed vetting process. And that's where our product already kicks in, and get it down to about, 2 to 3% acceptance rate, actually make it onto the platform. So, to us, sort of the best marketers, so to speak. And then we spend a lot of work on breaking those roles down and those marketers down to very specific roles, very specific skills, very specific data attached to like what those jobs do. And then on demand side, you get this very techie experience where, hey, come to Marketer Hire, speak to one of our account managers, and we'll match you to your perfect expert marketer in about 48 to 72 hours. And they're ready to work and start right away. So what might be a 0 to 3, 6 month journey to hire someone to join your marketing team that you really love, you can meet that person in 48 to 72 hours now. And we get a lot of, that sounds too good to be true, which I take as both a challenge and a compliment, but it really works. And a lot of that work is upfront and sort of driven by the data and tech and very careful design around what marketers do. And also design around how do we get that intake from our potential hirers to make sure that we have helped them properly explain what they want to hire and why, and also told them no to a lot of things that, as from a product perspective, we disagree. This is not what this role can do. And you cannot have someone who's an expert in 10 things, right? A lot of these things we clean up on behalf of the hirer. And then that's what really enables everything to work in the middle. So to the hirer, it's like a very concierge, like magical experience. To the marketer, they're able to just get a steady flow of high quality freelance projects. And they may have a job, a day job, they may be full-time freelance, doesn't really matter to us. We're very progressive in our view of the future of work, but they're able to very easily now add a lot of income, and in some cases entirely freelance with us from the work from us alone, without having to do any of the work that usually scares people off freelancing or making it very difficult. You might be a great marketer, but you might not have the network. You might not be great at pitching. You might not want to have to deal with billing. You might not want to have to deal with contracts. You might not want to even take the risk. You might be tired. But if we can hand you a project on a platter, almost Mission Impossible style, to be like, hey, here it is. If you want to do it, you can do it. And we'll set up a phone call tomorrow. That's a magical experience too for the marketer side. And for me as a career marketer, that's what drives me a lot, is improving the outcomes and career optionality and mobility for my profession and my peers, because we've been beat up a lot over the years.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the curation piece on both sides seems to be the key or one of the more interesting parts of it. And that, in having seen a portfolio company of Bowery's go through this process, it is much different than your typical experience, right? Instead of getting 10 profiles with 50 pieces of portfolio collateral that you need to sift through and figure out which one you like the best, it's a deep discovery on what exactly are you looking for, specifics, and then here's who we think is the perfect person for that. Cool. And one more question before we really dig into the topic of today, marketing operations, that we always like to ask is, what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
An interesting thing is, at one point I was doing a webcomic full-time, actually, for a brief moment between companies. I like to draw, and I was doing a soccer webcomic that was quite popular, and was nibbling at that, as I've always been interested in creation.
Yeah, super cool. All right, let's get into it, Chris. So I love to start with the basics. What are we talking about when we say marketing operations? This seems like a vague, nebulous term, so help us help us unpack it a bit.
Yeah, it is like a lot of things. I think it's a term that probably most people aren't throwing around yet, but is coming up a lot at the enterprise level, and is, I think, going to bleed its way into startups pretty soon. I had one of the first marketing agencies for startups in 2010, before like growth was even a term, before a lot of these companies even thought that they should have a marketing strategy. So I've seen over the last 10 or so years, the whole evolution of how companies, startups and all stages, think about marketing and staff for marketing and execute marketing. And ultimately, the challenge that they face has been around what I would call marketing operations. How do I know who to hire? How do I know when to hire them? How do I structure a team? How do I set goals? How do we set workflow? How do we measure? How do I set budgets? How do I set strategy? All these things. And a lot of that goes into like, just gets moved into like company planning. So maybe the founder's doing it. Some of it got co-opt into what people might call growth. Oh, let's set a framework and make sure you measure things, which is not a new thing, but sure, right? Let's make sure you measure things and I'm very diligent about creating a framework for acquiring customers. But marketing operations, how do I go about building a sensical marketing team and marketing ecosystem that is stage appropriate and successful for my company at its simplest? Like, that's marketing operations. And so it changes at stages. Enterprise company, very large company, would obviously have very different marketing operations requirements and goals than an early stage company with a couple of founders making their first hires. So it really changes up and down the line, but ultimately it's how do I build a marketing ecosystem at this company that is stage appropriate and will achieve my goals.
And so you mentioned it does change down the line depending on where the company's at. I'd love to get into that a little bit more. So how does marketing ops change over the company lifecycle? And maybe just give us a snapshot. What does this look like at maybe an early stage company that's just getting started versus a more mid-stage company, let's say Series B, and then maybe versus like a more mature company that just has a bigger team?
I think at sort of early stage, day zero, like paint a profile of a typical startup, couple of founders, maybe one or two employees, and probably no one has any marketing experience because, you know, different issue maybe for a different podcast. But they're probably sitting there saying, great, we're building a product, we have a product, we're launching, we're about to launch. And so we need customers, right? Whether I'm selling something, whether it's a D2C company or B2B SaaS, we need customers. Or potentially we need potential customers to get data, varying stages, right? So at that point, you have a very specific goal. And even right away at that point, marketing operations breaks down at a lot of early stage startups. They don't actually have a clear goal. And like, you know, I have probably a dozen of these conversations a week for various reasons with founders or even marketers at early stage companies. And this is very common. The first thing I'll say is, well, what's the goal? And it's always like this awkward, well, you know, funny you say that. Like, I don't think we really know what we're doing, right? And well, who's your target demo? Well, funny you say that. I don't think we really agreed, right? Like, this happens all the time. I mean, the vast majority of the time when I ask those questions, there are not confident answers. And so right at the very top around market operations, what is our customer and what are we trying to do with them? Like, are we trying to get them to buy? Are we trying to get them to test the product? Are we trying to get a certain number because we have a forecast? Like, what is actually the goal here? And once you set that up, then you can work your way down the line to, okay, well, the next big thing is once we decide that, do we have anyone at the company who knows how to do this? Which sounds, you know, silly, but that used to be a question that a lot of startups still even now don't feel like is necessary. They're like, well, we'll just figure it out, right? Which is interesting. But usually you should want to have someone at the company who's had experience building out marketing and marketing team and marketing ecosystem. And so once you have that, then you work your way down the line and say, okay, well, now we can come up with tactics and we can figure out resourcing and a bunch of other stuff. But at the very earliest stage is simply target demo, goals, and then team resourcing. Do we have someone here who knows how to do the thing? That's really it. And then you get started. Once you get more mature, you know, generally you've got momentum, you've got data, you've probably got a team in place, you've probably got a budget in place, call it like Series B, right? At that point, it's usually a battle of organizational efficiency, because at that point you're doing a lot of stuff and tying that stuff together and making sense of it and saying, hey, this is actually what's working and that's what's not working. And let's turn this up and turn that down. And that's where I think a lot of the growth desire to like coin this growth term came from. It's like, well, whose job is that? Like, whose job is it to look at this in a structured manner and optimize it? But marketing operations, again, at a larger company, still covers this area where you're looking at everything, right? Like, who's doing the work? How are we setting budgets? What are business goals, business timing? And the challenge at that point is usually inertia. You've got momentum, you've got a team that you have hired. And at that point, you're probably sitting there with a bunch of hypotheses about some really big and tough changes that you might want to make. But inertia leads you to continue to sort of stick with the plan, stick with the same people, stick with the same agency, whatever it may be. And that usually is a big challenge. So a big part of doing marketing operations well at scale, like at many stages, but early stages more about like setting off or starting well and up on a good foot. At any scale, especially that middle growth stage scale, that Series B stage, it's like, are you continuing to take an axe to this thing? Do you have the conviction to make operational changes? Do you have the continued knowledge and skill set to say, well, let's actually deplatform off this CRM and move to this other one? Like really tough stuff. And you even have the expertise to be able to do that. That's really where it is, right? And you can easily just like go 4 or 5 months and be like, man, I really wish we had made that change. Or I really wish we had changed this person. Or I really wish, but we were already planning this whole thing. And then now you're in big company problems already.
It's such an interesting point, because in startups, especially earlier stage startups, you hear the word inertia thrown around a lot. And usually it's referring to the challenge of inertia going from 0 to 1 and actually getting started. But you don't hear nearly as much about the challenges of actually being able to stop that inertia and make the hard decisions once you're already in motion and once you already have that momentum behind you. So I really like that point. I've seen startups fall guilty to that, of not taking a hard enough stance to make those tough decisions. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
It's very human, right? It's a very human thing to get into. And that's why that operational role, again, like a lot of companies that they'll sit with like, oh, well, my head of growth thinks about that. But that's really different, right? I mean, growth is sort of the challenge of this framework and this process. Your head of growth may not be the person who's like time to completely change 30% of our team, like time to make massive structural changes to this company. That's why marketing operations is different, right? That operations part of it is like, hey, top to bottom, I'm working with exec team and I'm looking at this thing academically, the whole thing, right the way through. And what do we need to do here? Is it, let's not use Slack anymore. What is the thing here operationally that makes us a better marketing organization, marketing ecosystem? And that's really different. So that's a series B. And then once you get to the enterprise and up, that's where there's actually much less commonality, I think, between companies, because the company is so big, the specifics of that company really kick in, right? So if you're a very large company, you probably have a bunch of like long-term deals. You probably already signed budgets on like a quarterly annual basis. That inertia is like, you can't really even change it. It's a big deal to change it. It's headline news if you make some of the changes we're talking about a Series B company making. So it's a lot harder at that point. And it actually comes back down to logistics. A lot of enterprise companies, market operations is, it'll be about tech stack. It'll be about asset management. It'll be about, it's very like, not boring, but very, very infrastructure. Right. The other stuff is a little harder to move. So again, very broad stroke. I think the broadest stroke is at the enterprise level, because when you're that big, the specifics are really nailed to the wall and very different versus any startup stage.
And so as a result of that, let's focus on more the early to mid-stage startups for most of our chat for the remainder of the discussion today. You alluded to it there as you were talking about the order as people go from early stage, really that 0 to 1, to then, okay, now they're more mid-stage in that Series B. But let's unpack the main buckets or steps that companies will need to tackle as they approach building out their marketing operations. You mentioned team, budget, goals, workflows, all these different elements. What I'm really interested in is the order of operations. There's a lot to tackle as founders are listening to this and they're trying to put this into action. Let's help orient them around what's the right order of operations here that they can go and actually make some progress on it.
For early stage companies specifically, step one is going to be, for me anyway, do I have someone who has marketing experience in the room? Because if you don't, I don't really know what you're doing. I don't know what outcome you're expecting. If you sort of say, hey, here's a thing that I want to figure out and do. It is a job. Someone has done it before and knows it, but let me just wing it. If I'm renovating my house right now, I'm not going to like be my own GC and just be like, yeah, whatever. I think we need an electrician. Like that'd be really weird, right? So this is a job that someone knows has done before. And if there is not a marketing expert in the room of some kind, that's step one. You should address that. Once there's someone in there with actual marketing experience, then you move through the classic steps, because most startups get into it. They tend to skip a lot of really important steps. And I end up having conversations with them after they've been executing for months. I'll ask about goals, I'll ask about target customer, and there's no good answers. And like, well, okay, well, why did you start before knowing that? I mean, this is just a very strange thing to do, but understandable. So step one, get someone with marketing experience, whether it's an advisor, you pay them, whatever. Step two, set a strategy. And this is a part that a lot of early stage startups fear. And they fear, and I think frankly, disrespect from a marketing strategy perspective. Sit down and say, okay, I have a product that's meant to do X for these people. If you really understand that target demo and your product can really do that thing, marketing is pretty easy, right? I mean, at that point, it's just there's a million ways where you can efficiently put your product in front of that demo, and maybe they will, maybe they won't buy it. And then at that point, it's just data and math to work your way to a sustainable business model. But what's the strategy, right? What's the messaging? What's the target demo? How are you pitching it in? Variety of things go into strategy. Start there. Make sure you're really clear in there. And target demo, crucial, right? Ideal customer profile, absolutely crucial. Skipped entirely all the time. which is the thing that leads to chaos, right? It is the centerpiece that drives everything else. If you don't have that, and again, I can't tell you how many startups I've spoken to, hey, we're just going to run some tests. Actually, we want to spend like $500 on Facebook to figure out which of our target demos like the product the best. Like, that's not it. All right, you're done.
And what I find too is even when folks don't skip it entirely, which I completely agree happens way too often, is it's too general. And it's not nearly specific enough when you are starting out and you need to be specific. You're not going to be able to boil the ocean. You got to really know who you're going after.
Part of strategy, goals is important. Like when your real goal, if your goal is like build a $1 billion company, no wonder your target demo is very broad, right? Because you just really have no point. But if your goal is, let me get my first 500 customers. Let me make sure that my target demo likes my product. Well, what does that mean? Let me make sure that I prove through some other hypothesis. Well, that's your goal. So a very specific goal, then you can have a very specific target demo. And then from there, you can come up with a very specific strategy. And when you do those steps in a row with someone who knows what they're doing in the room from a marketing perspective, it is very straightforward. It really is. It's a very straightforward thing for an expert to help most people do the thing that they are an expert in, as long as the rest of the decisions are made. Again, use a house renovation analogy. If I'm working with a general contractor to renovate my house, that person is not worried about coming up with like how to put the door somewhere, how to raise the ceiling. But if I don't know if I want high ceilings or low ceilings, I don't really know. If I maybe we'll do this, maybe we won't. I don't know if I want solar. If I don't know any of that stuff, waffling, hey, can we test if I have two solar? You can't get anywhere, right? You can't get anywhere. Right. So these decisions have to be made so that you can let expert people do their thing. And startups, especially tech startups, you've realized that because of how much just like excruciating process there is in product development and engineering, right? That should be applied here too. Very simple, apply here too. You should have as much detail put into specs and briefs for marketing as you do a new feature, as much diligence goes into that to justify it. Use the stories, you know, do it, right? Like same thing is required. So once you kind of nail that at the strategy level, then you can move that into tactics. And most people, very classic thing, what's the difference between strategy and tactics? Most people just like come up with a definition that sounds the same, right? But strategy shouldn't really change. Tactics can change, right? Strategy is like, this is our strategy. We've thought about it. It makes sense. We're going to commit to this. Shouldn't be testing your strategy. Tactics you can test, right? Tactics you can adjust. And so once you define your tactics, which is where budget comes in, how much you want to spend and what are you capable of doing, variety of things. Once you set your tactics, then you can go into resourcing. Once your tactics, well, who do we have to actually execute these things? What do we need? Do we need a designer? Do we need a copywriter? Do we need whatever, media buyer? Do we need content, et cetera, et cetera? You can go into resourcing and data instrumentation, most likely, because you're going to start with your tactics. You can build out your MarTech stack. You can figure out your attribution model. You can figure out a bunch of stuff to start building. And then once you have the right resources, you can start. So you have your goals, you have your target demo, you have your strategy, you have your tactics you're going to test, you have your resources, who's going to enable those tactics to be executed, both people and budget and tech and whatever. Start running it. You start running it. And at that point, because you've committed to a bunch of decisions up at the top, right? You committed to your strategy, you've committed to your target demo, you've thought about it. At some point, the startup has to be right. Like, you can't just like have an idea and then just like test a bunch of stuff, right? Like, you're going to be right about a bunch of stuff.
You will run out of money.
That's the point, right? The more things you have to test, money you need to test them, right? So if you can get it down to where like, I know my target demo, I know my strategy, I know my tactics, then yes, you can be like, well, let's see which of these three ads do better. Let's see which of these two things do better. And there's much fewer of them and they're way down. But if you're still up here being like, well, let me test whether or not this demo likes my product better than that demo. And also I'm going to run the ads myself and blah, blah, blah. You're like, what are you doing? You're generating terrible data, nothing. You're just like burning money for 4 or 5 months and then you're blaming something, right? So, so if you don't do this well, and it's a big thing with early stage startups and every startup, every company, well, not every company, but every startup is going to say, yeah, we're data driven. Yeah, I mean, but like, are you, right? Like, do you know what that really means, right? Do you know how to produce good data, right? Sample size is an enemy for like most of the startups already. Mm-hmm. And being able to command that is usually not an expert thing for most startups. But then also, are you able to design a test that is executed at a sufficiently expert level that you don't have to just erase all of the data and sort of like wave all the data because you didn't do it well? Mm-hmm. Right. If you don't execute well, you can't use that data, or you find out you're bad at this. Right. Like, it's nothing to do with the results of the test. So if a startup says to themselves, I want to be data driven, I want to figure out my best channels, my tactics, and figure out customer acquisition strategy, you have to do the upfront work to set a plan. You have to have expertise helping you with that plan, and you have to have expertise executing that plan. And then you have true data, true positive data and true negative data, and you can work with that, right?
Right.
You can work, and you're on a path to improve.
And data that you can actually like make tweaks based on, right? Because if you don't do the ICP correctly and you just start hiring copywriters and media buyers and doing all the stuff, and it's like very hit or miss, not really working, you're like, okay, is email marketing not a good channel for us? Or are we just sending this to like the complete wrong people? And you don't have any way to unpack that unless you build it up the right way, which then makes it just that much longer that you're having to run these experiments for because you're not doing it in a methodical way.
Exactly right. The absolute killer and most common killer is just this sort of zombie. You don't realize you're dead, but you're a zombie startup, essentially. You're just like doing stuff and passing time, right? And that's really common for all stages, but the early stage startups. They're not spending enough to get sample size. Or like you said, they're like, email doesn't work for us. Like, well, I don't think. I mean, I tweeted something along these lines just a couple of days ago. And I get asked a lot, does X tactic work? Does X channel really work? Like, yes, if you do it well and it suits your company and you have good unit economics and a million things. And no, if you do it poorly and a million things. And like, so like, yes, every channel can work and every channel cannot work. But that mindset is super common for early stage companies where they're like, well,
what's the silver bullet?
Yeah, what's the silver bullet? And if I spend 6 hours of my time, it doesn't work. Like, I don't think Facebook works. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this, again, just very strange, easy to rationalize why that happens. But that's why, again, we're talking about marketing operations. To step back, the step one is respecting the fact that this is a thing. Marketing and marketing operations is important and that it can be thought through and it can be methodical. And it's not about a growth process to like test things way down the line. Like when you hear about growth, they skip all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Not skip this stuff, they do ICP, but it's a different emphasis, right? It's like, how can I get you into just like testing. Whereas the emphasis of marketing operations is like, that's going to happen. I mean, sure, like testing and being live in market like that's over here. I'm entirely focused on, are you doing this well?
Yeah.
Right. Are you doing this well? And like, what does that even mean? And zeroing in there. And that's really just generally like skipped entirely. I mean, very stressed about. It's the most common thing in some way a founder asked me is something in the world of what I would call marketing operations. They just don't sort of like think of it as a thing that they need to be doing.
And you can tell by the question that you've skipped some steps.
Yeah. Oh, if I can just find this expert to do this thing, it'd be so easy and blah, 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 blah. So it's all stuff that I'm like, well, back to first principles, a little bit of marketing here.
Yeah.
What are you really doing?
So one question I have for you, just thinking about those steps you just outlined, and I'm going to combine almost the first three here. When you're taking stock and you're thinking, okay, who do we have internally? What resources, where are the gaps? What do we need to go out and find, whether it's a freelancer, or whether it's a full-time hire, depending on the situation, whether it's an agency, whether it's marketer hire, whatever. And then from there, figuring out the goals and the strategies and making sure we've got our target demo down and creating the tactics. One thing that I often struggle with is, so in order to get to the point where you can actually identify what types of skills you need and what channels you're going to be doubling down on, there needs to be some experimentation at a lightweight on these different channels. Are we going to be going big on paid social or paid search? Or are we going to be going big on email marketing, content, whatever it is? There needs to be some high level, all right, we're collecting data, we're figuring out what works. And then from there, let's go hire the experts and the right people and put our budget. That's at least how I've traditionally thought about it. Where I struggle with is some of these experiments, it's almost like they need to happen before you make some of these other decisions. How do you think about that as companies are, and this is an early stage question, but as they are trying to like do that lightweight experimentation and make sure that they're on the right path?
Yeah. So this is something that, I mean, that there's a lot of ways to do this. And my personal preference, if I'm giving some advice to an early stage startup, for me, it's about variable reduction. I'm like, look, what you want to do in marketing and frankly across the board is minimize the variables to success to just your product. You've invented something. It's a huge variable whether or not your thing is any good, right? And like whether or not your thing is priced correctly and whether or not your thing does the thing over time. Like, that is a huge, like that is the variable. Among all the variables of success, it's whether or not your product does or doesn't suck. Right. And at an early stage, whether it's ready for it. So like, you don't really have room for a lot of other, you know, dealing with a lot of other variables. And so that's why when I hear from early stage companies who are like, oh, you know, growth hacker, like what do you, like, why are you trying to hack anything, right? Like, you should not introduce these variables where like you're the only SaaS company in the entire world running this marketing strategy. Like, why would you want that? I went 6 months trying like this weird influencer program that no other company has done. Ooh, like that didn't, like, why, well, why did you do that? Like, so for an early stage company, I would recommend like that de-risk, put a high floor, minimize variables, minimize excuses. And so unless you have a really, really innovative company where no one has ever come before you, there is a playbook that exists for a B2B SaaS company, for a D2C e-commerce company, for a marketplace, for an app. Like, there is a playbook that exists that is a comfortable, sort of broadly applicable playbook for marketing for your company, right? There just is. And to de-risk and minimize variables, I would just run that playbook. And so that's like why it should be very straightforward, because if you buy into what I'm saying and say, well, that actually sounds good, like, why don't I just do what the other 1,000 B2B SaaS companies are doing? That way I don't wonder if my weird strategy, my hacky strategy, you don't want to be wondering about that, right? Your investors are not like, hey, I want to give you this money to find out if you're the greatest marketing innovator of our time. Like, that's not what they wanted, right? They're just like, no, I want you to like build this product. Like, just like hire a sales team guy. Like, don't invest it. Why are you inventing anything, right? So just run that playbook. And then that makes it really easy, because what we talked about was, as you work your way down this line of things that you don't have to test anymore, you don't have to worry about as being variables, all of your time and resources now can be committed to the very fewest last things. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a B2B SaaS company, content, email, sales team, a little bit of paid on the top, there you go. You know, partnerships, like push the boat out. And if you build that little ecosystem and you just have people doing it, you can be testing right at the very end around like, okay, well, I know I need a freemium offer that then has an email nurture series to get you to convert to the paid product. I know I need to have that. The testing now is the subject lines
right
of those four emails. I'm testing whether or not maybe I don't need it. I'm going to use a chatbot. Don't test it. Like, you have to have that. Just do it. And then the very small budget you probably have and very limited amount of time you probably have for this can go towards this last set of things and last right set of variables. And again, marketing operations, that's efficiency, right?
Yep.
You now have an efficient marketing setup. You're not like just juggling a million things and bad at all of them. Like, that's a really bad idea, right? And
yeah,
that's usually what I hear when I'm giving advice and I ask people to describe. It's just like a combination of, well, we don't think that's true. Like, we reject the common marketing understanding of how to build a whatever company. It's like why? Like, what do you want to write on your tombstone? Had a great product, but made up a bunch of marketing and then couldn't find customers. Like, sounds terrible. What's going to be on your tombstone is you should think about that and be like, looking back, if only we didn't try to invent marketing, we would have been fine, right?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of companies right now. If only we didn't try and do marketing ourselves and not hire a marketer. Sounds bad when you say it out loud, probably not what you want to look back on, whether you Deadpooled or not, or whether you just wasted 4 months trying to like figure out Salesforce yourself. Sounds like a bad way to spend your time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good perspective to have. And it's also helpful just in terms of framing. The goal here is to spend as much time in step five, that analyze and optimize, as possible. And so
yeah,
it's like, how do you de-risk your way as you're going through these steps, so that's where you're spending your time and you're just doing these fine tweaks and you're not really having these existential questions about, am I on the completely wrong path or not?
And it comes from, again, just like not understanding and frankly, again, respecting at this point, marketing as a deep technical area of expertise. If I'm like, hey, I'm going to build an app and it's going to be food delivery, and by the way, I'm going to invent my own coding language, you'd be like, well, like that, I don't know that you should spend time on inventing your own coding language to build the food delivery app. Like, just use right what's out there. And I'm like, oh, right, okay. But it's literally like what happens, you know, from a marketing perspective, when we hear these things, we're like, why are you doing that? Like, that, right, there's a thing that does the thing in right marketing. What is the need to invent it? And then you'll get a lot of answers, which is like, oh, it's too expensive, or does that really work? And like, it's just, again, just a bunch of like very strange, again, I can only attribute back to sort of a combination of like fear and lack of respect for the industry, frankly.
Yeah. Yep, totally. I think that's a great analogy. One of the things I'm hearing is just this idea of growth and growth hacking and almost jumping straight into just the optics of what people see is happening without knowing all the work that's setting the foundation for that thing. When you're looking at this order operation steps, it's like the first four is, or three or four, just like preparation, right? Like getting everything in order so that when you are executing, you're executing the right things that are measured the right way against goals that make sense, that align with the broader company vision. And if something's not working, like what to tweak to fix it. And so super leading question is like this growth marketing, growth hacking, is this one of the areas you see overhyped, or are there others that we haven't touched on?
I'm very narrow in my view of this because, you know, again, I started in direct response in 03. And so I've like been here for the whole thing. But we offer growth marketers as a title at Marketer Hire, specific about it. Because if you ask 50 startups for a definition, or 50 growth marketers for a definition, you'll get 50 different answers. And that doesn't lend itself to us being able to match that, right? So we have to come up with a singular definition that also makes sense against the rest of the industry. You can't have, you know, multiple jobs that work sound like they do the same thing. That, again, that's part of what makes it hard to hire anything, let alone marketers. So for me and for us, it's a data-driven strategist. Okay, the part that is new is that this growth concept and frameworks and measurement and iteration and the technical instrumentation of that measurement. Do you know how to set up a Google Tag Manager sufficiently? Do you understand the difference between four or five different attribution models for the company? You have to be able to do that part. Like that data part is the part. It's not, oh, this person can do all the channels at once. Like that's not a growth marketer. That's just, you just want someone to do a bunch of stuff they shouldn't be doing. Like that can be any job. Oh, I'm an operations hacker because I do HR as well. Like that's not a job. That's just like, you're just doing it, right? But so for growth for us and for me, it is someone who zeroes in and has that skill set to be a data-driven strategist. And there's a very high bar for what that means. It's not, you look at data, you have to help the company instrument that data, right? So if you go to an early stage startup, guaranteed they don't have an attribution model. Guaranteed they probably are not using a sensical UTM structure to cleanly bucket channels by performance, right? Like that stuff, the stuff that is the stuff you probably don't think about and is boring because growth hacking and executing different channels sounds more fun. The actual part that gets the thing, which is being very data driven and being very framework and process oriented, is largely technical and largely operational. So that's growth to me. And yeah, I think growth hacking, I mean, yeah, for me as a marketing purist, but also having someone who had to kind of live through startups, like, yeah, that was never a thing. You know, I mean, it's not a thing. It just isn't. Like hacking insinuates that can't get to the end outcome, right? I hack into the CIA because the CIA is not going to let me just get into the CIA, right? Don't just like let me into the mainframe. So I have to like figure out how to get in there because there's no way in. That's not the case of marketing. Like you can just do it. Like you don't have to hack. Like you don't have to hack it. I don't need like build a ladder. There's like a door right here. So walk through the door and like I'm good to go. So there was never a need to like hack anything. And I was only born out of, again, complete lack of desire, respect, whatever, for marketing as a profession. So a bunch of randos were like, well, I hack it because I offer $10 to you. If you give $10 to your friend, I just hacked growth. Like, that's a referral program that's been around for like 50 years, 100 years, right? So, mm-hmm. So a lot of this stuff was really just,
it's like rebranded.
That was, yeah, that always been there. Rebranded, and frankly, rebranded unproductively. Because right. That growth hacky part of it, again, made it seem like you could just go jump straight.
Just into, go nuts, yeah.
Go nuts. Like, yeah. It's like, why do that?
I mean, right.
You know, if you like gambling, go for it. But if you want to actually have a sensical plan and a process, which is probably to me the truest sense of like what the growth movement was meant to be, is like have a framework, have a process, and it will lead you to linear progress. The hacking part of it doesn't really make sense then.
That's really helpful and just helps to clarify. Growth marketing should be specific, and a lot of this is behind the scenes. Growth hacking oftentimes overused and just a poor strategy if you think that it's just an all-in-one solution.
Yeah.
And Chris, one of the other things I wanted to dig in here, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the importance of hiring experts, right? And not just trying to figure it out, follow the playbook, build off of the hard work and mistakes that other people have made so that you can decrease the time that you're wasting and just be more successful as a result. What are the pieces here that people can do internally? From listening to this and thinking about it, it sounds like a lot of the really high level pieces on like strategy and ICP and some of the initial messaging and tinkering of just thinking through where do these people live and how can we reach them? I would think those are some things that people could maybe peel off and try to do themselves before they hired in experts, but we'd love to just get your take for early stage startups that are trying to think through, okay, what are we going to do in-house? What are we going to find another, you know, outside expert or freelancer for, how they should divide and conquer?
So if you're early stage, I would say it's not just even what can you do. I mean, all the technical stuff you shouldn't really do yourself. I absolutely encourage people to like read and learn and join communities, because the more you understand it, the better you're going to be able to be at marketing operations, but also just hiring and managing it and folding it properly into your business, right? Product market fit has market right in it. And like no one ever really does that part, right? They just do the product part and then like guess. So really work on that, fold that market part and marketing part into your work and your world as a founder and an early stage startup is really important. It's half of product market fit. And if you don't think of it that way and spend that time that way, then not doing it right. So I think encourage them to learn, but I wouldn't do it yourself. I would say the part is the very early part. Goals, budget, and ICP. Those are things that you still should have those adjusted, because you may not know, you know, when I set a budget, I get asked all the time, well, how much should I set, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're going to ultimately have to talk to a marketer to really get that. But there are versions of those questions that you can answer purely as business questions and product questions, right? Your budget, hey, marketer, how much should I spend? I don't think as an early stage company that it's just like whatever the marketer tells you. You should have a sense of burn and goals and where you want to be, desirable unit economics and tolerable CAC. Like that's all stuff that you can calculate, a little bit of study and just work to work on your own numbers internally. And then if you can hand those to the marketer, they don't go and do their job. Because if we just met and you're like, hey, I just raised $2 million round a few weeks ago, we're ready to go. How much should I set aside for marketing? I can just make up a number for no reason, right? But I have no idea how your business works and that. So all that stuff can be done at the business level. And then you want a marketer to come in and work with you and say, okay, well, that makes sense. That doesn't make sense, or whatever it is, or that's possible, that's not possible. Because you know a lot of things kick in just around like your price points and target demo, all those things affect it. So I think you can do that upfront work. So the first sort of everything up through strategy, you can do a business version of them, mm-hmm. but you're going to want to work with someone with a marketing experience in order to polish them up, iterate them, and ultimately before you really use them and move on to the next step of like defining tactics and hiring people and stuff. So that early stuff though, you can do yourself.
Cool.
And frankly, should.
You right, should. Right.
It's really important to have conviction as a business and a product around who your target demo is.
And Chris, one of the last questions I want to ask here before we get to final thoughts is marketing operations. We've discussed at length today. It sounds like a lot of different people and stakeholders and teams involved, depending on what stage of the process that you're at. Who should own this? Who should end up owning marketing operations internally? Is it a single person? Is it just sort of, you know, spread out over many? Is it the CMO? Yeah. Like, how do you think about it?
It's a great question. So latter stage, it's a person, right? It's a person. Any mature company that is growing headcount, 20, 30 plus, you can probably make it a person if you want to. Otherwise, any marketing leadership should be able to cover this for an early stage company. So whether you have a director of marketing or whatever else, whatever the marketing leadership is at your company, you can cover it. I wouldn't advise a founder to just like do it themselves unless they plan to invest a ton of time into learning it and having advisors. And again, it's possible. It's just like, I don't think that's, again, as a founder, like, is that where you want to be spending a lot of time, is learning how to put together a marketing team when there are people who can just do it for you and just tell you the stuff in like 20 minutes. So the earlier the stage, it's not a person, it's not a team. It's just a thing that you have to be very aware of that you have mm-hmm. to do. So yeah. It can't, you know, just make it part of how you search for your first marketing hire or your lead marketing hire, whether it's a growth marketer, a CMO, whatever you want to call it, the person who's there to manage your marketing, whoever that is, make sure that you ask them like, what is your experience? And marketing operations, still a new term, but if you say it, people will understand. Any marketer will understand basically what you mean, even though there's different definitions. But you want to understand, have you built a team before, right? You want to basically ask all the questions that you're asking me on this podcast. Like have you built a team before? How would you go about setting budget? How do you think about process? How do we measure? Like ask those questions. And if you get bad answers or unconfident answers, don't make that person your first marketing hire.
Right.
Right. Don't hire someone who's only ever run paid ads. Like, great, you're in charge of marketing now. You figure out marketing operations. Like, because that person probably hasn't done it either. It's a very specific thing that you have to have some leadership who's done it before. And it can be an advisor. Grab any reasonably experienced CMO for like a couple hours a week and probably good to go.
Makes a lot of sense. All right. So Chris, we've covered a ton of ground today. It's been a lot of fun. Are there any final thoughts, tips, tricks that you want to leave folks with to summarize?
I think just generally, again, we just respect that marketing is a skilled job that can be done. If you're a tech startup, don't think of it any differently to your engineering team. Like, treat it like it's your engineering team. Treat it like it's your how you approach product development, right? Don't treat it like this weird thing that can be hacked or anything. Just like, it's like a regular department, and just hire people who have done it before in some capacity, part-time, full-time, agency, whatever, and you'll be fine. And again, like, narrow the variable down to your product. That's for me in helping 100 plus startups with marketing in some capacity of all stages. The ones who are doing well are the ones who have peace of mind around their marketing because they bothered to resource it correctly, and then they can just focus on product. But the ones who are struggling are the ones who are treating marketing like, if only I can crack it, we'll be fine. Those are ones who are spinning their wheels for years, and millions of dollars later are really no closer.
Great. Well, I think that's a really good note to end on. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And that's our show. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, subscribe to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.